Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's Craig Bolanos, the co-founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group. Invest with WMG.com's his website. Hi, Craig. Welcome over his website. Hey, Craig, welcome back to the show.
Hey, John, happy Friday. Markets are closed, but we got some great information to share with everybody, I hope.
Is it good news or just important news when you say great?
Oh, I actually think it's both. It's important and good. The important news would be that the inflation data, the personal consumption expenditure, which is the data that the Fed looks to determine whether or not we're going to get those interest rate cuts. What's the over-under, John? You teased it 2.5 weeks ago. It's about 2.5%. You know I'm still taking the over. So that came in line. And best of all, we just had 5 consecutive months of rally. That's a rare occurrence on Wall Street, but it's a good setup if history's any prognosticator.
What do you mean, a prognosticator of what?
Well, you know, you and I have talked before that history shouldn't be a mystery. And when we see the fact that the market has rallied 5 consecutive months in a row, that's only happened 30 other times since 1950. And here's the good news. There's no guarantee, but in the 12 months of those 30 other similar occurrences, the market's been up on average 12% in the ensuing year. So I'm not saying there's a 12% move in markets from here, but if history's our guide and it's the only guide we have, people might continue to smile about their 401k balances in the year to come.
I set the over-under at 2.5. You took the over. 3 interest rate cuts, 75 basis points. But inflation is still a deal, isn't it?
The inflation is still a deal. I just went to Jewel Osco and did some Easter egg shopping, John. Trust me, I couldn't believe the bill when I was done buying candy. But then again, there is a cocoa shortage. That explains the chocolate prices, right? But no, I mean, we haven't broken the back of inflation yet. I know that. Every consumer and every investor knows that, because the last part of the journey is always the most arduous. It's always the most difficult, and that's right where we are. But I think we're going to continue to grind that inflation rate down year over year. And if that happens, it's a decent backdrop for economics, earnings, and market prices potentially in the year to come.
Well, what's the rate right now? What's the what's the inflation rate number that I should know right now?
Well, I think what you want to talk about is really, you know, what came out today. And what we learned today is the headline PCE, that inflation rose 0.3% month over month. The annual rate, you know, has crept up. It's 2.5%. But that is not a terrible thing. It's really not. The core rate, which includes, you know, everything, you know, that's at 3. It's not a bad place to be. It kind of feels normal to me. It just was a little abnormal coming off the pandemic when the inflation was running so hot. And then prior to the pandemic, the inflation was running so low. I think a lot of these discussions are markets and economics are actually not higher for longer. We're just normal for longer.
Has the Fed been specific about where at 2 point something they want to be? They said they want inflation to be at 2%, right? But do they mean 2.0 or 2.5? What do they mean by that?
You know, that means we got to go pull out that old, what's that chart book called, John? The dot plot. And then we need to start looking at the data. We call that the beige book. And I've heard this number of 2 tossed around, not casually. I've heard this number tossed around so specifically, but I don't believe that the Fed is going to fire their interest rate cut gun when they see the, you know, whites of their eyes. I don't think they're going to be looking to actually have a print at 2.0. I think the Fed's going to get in front of it, because while we might get some hot jobs data coming in this next Friday, that's the only significant piece of economic release coming up, I think we are going to continue to see some gradual layoffs over the course of 2024, and that's going to give the Fed some cover to give us a couple of those interest rates. Because remember, they want to maintain price stability, but also continue to maximize employment.
And Americans are, in other words, besides that, Americans are still spending. We are continuing to spend money, right?
I think so. When I'm done with you, I got to try to get a restaurant reservation for pasta or seafood on Good Friday. I'm going to have trouble. Don't tell my wife. I'm going to try to get a favor from somebody. But no, everybody is out spending. That hasn't stopped. Whether I'm at the airport, booking a hotel, travel and leisure, meals and entertainment, it's tough out there. Everyone's continuing to spend, but I acknowledge a lot of that spending is not with cash. A lot of that spending is with borrowed money. It's on the plastic. It's on the credit cards. And that'll maintain for a while, but eventually it'll come to a head. That just doesn't appear to be where we're going to be at in 2024.
Craig, a little while ago, we were talking about American spending, and you said, yeah, folks continue to spend. They're putting a lot of it on the plastic. Does that worry you, the debt that people are carrying?
Well, you know, we entered 2024 with average daily credit card balances, the balances that aren't getting paid off, being 15.6% higher than the previous year. So that's a noticeable jump. And John, I won't be surprised when we look at it in 2025, the balances will be 22 to 23% higher. It's a compounding effect. But as long as people have enough spending limits, meaning you have an $8,000 balance and a $20,000 credit limit, they're going to continue to spend. But if you have a $10,000 balance and you're already at eight, then I would be nervous. So I'm not yet nervous, but it's eventually going to come home to roost come early to mid 2025.
Why do you say that? What happens in early to mid 2025?
I think what happens is consumers just don't have the cash. We don't have the savings. The savings rate dipped below 5%. You and I talked about that 2 weeks ago on your show. And I think what's going to happen is human behavior means we're going to continue to spend, even if it's not in our best interest. That's going to continue to power this economy along. But eventually, those credit card balances, those home equity lines of credit get close to the borrowing limit. And when that happens, it finally curbs behavior. Hence, we're looking at slower economic growth to eventually come from the consumer finally tapping out.
Yeah, well, at some point, I guess that has to happen. Does this sound a little bit to you like what we're happening at a national level with the spending of money at the federal level that we don't have?
You know, I think that's long been a problem that we're, you know, writing checks that our bodies can't cash. But, you know, on the federal level, it's easy. I think we all know what's eventually going to happen. We're going to be raising revenue. That's probably a very nice but stealthy way for saying raising income taxes. And that's why at the Wealth Management Group, I encourage everybody to be thinking about proactive tax strategies, Roth conversions, Roth 401ks, non-deductible backdoor IRAs, because eventually the government's not going to stop spending. They're just going to raise revenue, which is raise taxes to keep it going.
So how does that work? Do you think it'll just be, will they raise the income bracket so the wealthiest people will on their last dollars earned pay a higher rate? Is that what happens?
You know, I think part of it's already written in stone. The Tax Cut and Jobs Act issued the lowest tax rates that we've seen in over 70 years. The Tax Cut and Jobs Act is set to expire on December 31st, 2025. So when everybody wakes up in 2026 from the lowest bracket, 10%, to the highest bracket, 37%, all of those marginal income tax brackets are going to be going up. And I don't believe we have the political will to renew the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. So everyone's going to be asked to start paying a little bit more starting in 2026.
Do you think we should? I presume the idea was that if you lowered the tax rate, it would spur economic activity and you would generate more income with lower taxes. Is that working? Should we keep that tax cut in place?
You know, I think lower taxes, less regulation, all of those things have always allowed free enterprise, free men, free women, and capital markets to prosper. I think what got in the way here was we did the tax cuts, and then the pandemic happened, and we did the CARES Act. We piled on with the ARP, the American Rescue Plan, and the combination of all of that spending really got the balance sheet out of whack. And that's why you and I continue to talk about inflation and continue to talk about interest rates.
Well, by next year, we won't be talking about the CARES Act or the pandemic. So do you think that a tax cut should stay in place, or do you think because of what you just said, they'll have to graduate the income tax rates?
Yeah, I think there's going to be political pressure and political will to start raising the income tax rate to let the Tax Cut and Jobs Act expire. I think there's going to be some political will to start means testing things in the future. We even heard that during what I call primary debates. And then last but not least, what do I advocate for, John? I advocate for this. I advocate for fiscal responsibility. I'm still convinced that we could take seven ordinary men and women living on 123 Main Street, and believe it or not, we could balance the budget and take out the pork belly spending. Just give us a week to do it. But that's a whole other show, isn't it, John?
Social Security would be another show, too. But about that, do you think that they'll raise the cap, or what would your advice be on that?
My advice to Congress would be start solving it right now. Do not wait. Not tomorrow, not next week. Be honest with America about the state of affairs. Be honest with America about the fact that we have substantial longevity risk and there's an awful lot of concerns. We've reformed Social Security not once, not twice, not but three times. I think it's going to have to happen again. I'm just concerned that we do it the right way with transparency. I heard political candidates say wealthy people don't need their Social Security. Well, that means means testing. Right now, we means test Medicare, and there's a lot of people that pay more for Medicare than their neighbors. But those levels, while they might seem high to many, they're actually punitive. So I think that the politicians just need to level with us on what needs to be done to make things sustainable, and it should be a combination of strategies that make it enduring versus focusing on any one person or any one individual.
Short answer to this, Craig. Do you know off the top of your head when that tax cut expires, what will the rates go to?
Tax Cut and Jobs Act expires. You see rates like the 10% and 12% bracket move up to 15. You see rates like the 24% bracket move to 28, and the 37% bracket by default drops back to 39.6.
Drops up to 39, if you will.
Up to 39.6, wow. Yes.
Yeah. Craig, it's always nice to talk to you, except for that last part.
Sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but hey, tell the weather people I need good weather on Sunday for my Easter egg hunt for all the nieces and nephews. Great to be with you, John.
You have a nice weekend. That's Craig Bolanos, the co-founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group. Invest with WMG.com. We try to keep you on the business lunch abreast of things going on the food and beverage scene. We talk with and about brew pubs. Phil Stefani was on with us yesterday talking about his business. And today I wanted to catch up with Jeff Lawler, who is the owner of Gayhouse Cafe. Jeff, you're on WGN Radio. Welcome to the show.
John, thank you for having me.
So Gayhouse is your place. Are you part of a group, or is this your one operation?
Gayhouse Cafe started in 1965. John Davis is the founder of Gayhouse. I joined Gayhouse back in 1994, so I'm celebrating my 30th year with Gayhouse. And in 2015, I was blessed enough to be able to buy Gayhouse, and I get to take Gayhouse to its 75th anniversary, hopefully. So
yeah. For those who have not been there, I have been. Tell us what it's like there and what's your niche in the market.
Well, I mean, we are a very unique niche. We're fondue dining. John Davis, when he opened Gayhouse, it was the first wine bar in the city of Chicago in 1965. People weren't drinking wine that much, but he enjoyed his time through Europe after graduating college. And so let's open a wine bar. And that's where he introduced live guitarists, flamenco and classical guitar. All he served was gourmet meats and cheeses and wines from around the world. It's when he moved Gayhouse to the Lincoln Park present location at 340 West Armitage in 1971 is when he introduced fondue dining. Fondue was just beginning to build its rage and its popularity. And he said, okay, let's do this. And he did it. And it's met with great success over the years. We feature a cheese fondue, a Swiss beer cheese fondue. We feature an entree fondue where people can cook beef tenderloin, lobster, shrimp, chicken, scallops, and assorted vegetables with 8 house-made dipping sauces. And then we have a dark Belgian chocolate fondue that we flame, and people roast marshmallows, and they dip assorted fruits and Rice Krispie treats and churros into the chocolate. So it is really a full fondue experience, and Gehaz has developed to be a very romantic restaurant in Chicago and throughout the country. So
I know you are got a special right now to encourage people who have not been to Gehaz before to give it a try, and we'll talk about that in a second. Describe the interior of your restaurant for us.
When you approach, when you pull up to Gehaz, you're going to walk down a flight of stairs, 8 stairs. So you're below street level. You come into a dimly lit restaurant that feels like you're in a wine cellar. A lot of our walls are lined with wine bottles throughout the years. I mean, we change them from time to time. But it's dimly lit. It's amber lighting. There's curtain booths. Yeah. And then, like I said, we had the live classical flamenco guitar music playing, and it's really a rich, warm experience.
It's regarded as one of the more romantic places in Chicago. I presume Valentine's Day, you can't get a reservation there.
Well, you can. The way we play it, it's the second Monday of January each year that we start taking reservations for Valentine's. And this year we had 3 seatings, and our middle seating, the 6:30 seating, sold out within 30 seconds of turning the computers on. And the other 2 seatings did sell out quickly within that week. But that's why Gehaz celebrates Valentine's for 21 days. This year we celebrated from the 5th all the way through the 25th. So
that's a pretty good idea. You mentioned that it's dimly lit, and anybody that's been there notices that. There's an ambiance that you've created. Does it concern you that sometimes people take out their cell phones to read things?
Some do. A few do. Not a lot do. And we've lightened up the dining room with lighter tablecloths and lighter walls, so the light is more reflective throughout the place. So, but occasionally somebody does. What they do is first-timers to Gehaz and to fondue dining, they're all preoccupied with how long to cook things, and then they break out the cell phone there and they have their timers on. So that they can just... Before cell phones, you didn't do that.
This experience now? You want people to discover fondue. What's the deal on that?
Well, when Gehaz started, like I said, in the 70s and even going into the 80s, fondue was very popular. It was done in the households quite regularly. So that generation and the next generation was very familiar. But now that we're 5 generations old, going on 6, that... less and less people know about fondue dining. To this day, 30% of our guests that come to Gehaz any given week are new to fondue dining and Gehaz. So we want people to discover fondue. I mean, there's a lot of wonderful restaurants in the city. Phil Stefani is a friend, and but fondue has a unique style of dining where you are cooking together, you're dipping together, you're creating together, versus just eating from your own plate. Mm-hmm. And that creates for a unique experience. So we want people to discover fondue dining. And throughout through March and into April here, if your listeners just come in and say, hey, we're here to discover fondue dining, then they will enjoy their cheese fondue and their chocolate fondue on the house when they enjoy a full premier dinner. All they need to do is when they make their reservation online, put it in their notes, or let the server know when you sit down that you're here to discover what fondue dining is about.
So what's the premier dinner? What does that include?
We start you off with Swiss Gruyere cheese fondue with bread, fruits, grapes for dipping into the cheese. It's accompanied by a house salad, a Dijon vinaigrette dressing. The entree fondue, where you have the choice of cooking in a soybean oil or a vegetarian broth, where you get to cook the beef tenderloin, the lobster, the shrimp, the chicken, the scallops, assorted vegetables. And as you're cooking your items, you're dipping them into one of our 8 house-made sauces. That's your entree portion. And then the dessert fondue is our dark Belgian chocolate fondue. We flame it, you roast marshmallows, and you dip assorted fruits into the chocolate. So that's your dessert. We also have rolled out our seasonal fondues, where we are having a caprese cheese fondue, okay, with the mozzarella, the brie cheese, and then the tomatoes and the basil. And then we have a blueberry cheesecake dessert fondue. So you do have options. So, yeah.
That's creative. And really, it's the only place I think of that does this sort of thing. So if you haven't discovered it, you can discover fondue with a special at Gejas. And that's spelled G-E-J-A-S, Gejas Cafe. That's the website, gejascafe.com. Jeff Lawler is the owner. Yes. Jeff, continued success, and thanks for giving us the lowdown.
You. 59 years. Next year will be 60. So thank you very much for having us.
Here's more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Home prices in the Chicago area are still on the rise. In the 9-county Chicago metro area, home prices went up by more than 10% in the first 2 months of 2024. That's about 5% above the nationwide price increase last month. Illinois Realtors says the metro area median home price was $320,000 in February. The median price in the city of Chicago was $330,000 last month, compared to about $315,000 pre-pandemic. A new analysis says Chicago area consumers spent more in 2023 than they did the year before. Retail sales at stores and restaurants rose to nearly $170 billion in 2023. Local consultant Melanophie & Associates says that's up 4% from 2022. Sales at drinking and eating establishments rose 7.3%. Sales of apparel and accessories were up 1.9%. Grocery store sales rose 2.2%. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And helping out today with the business of food is Adele.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing okay, thank you.
Yeah, that's the unmistakable voice of Orion Samuelson, the Big O. His voice boomed across these airwaves for more than 60 years. Orion has a big day coming up on Sunday.
Yes, 31st of March.
He will talk about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Sunday will mark the anniversary of a blizzard on a southwest Wisconsin dairy farm that was so bad the doctor could not get there to deliver our friend Orion Samuelson. So his great aunt guided little O into the world all those many years ago. How many?
90 years.
And this is where I ask you the obligatory question, what are the keys to a long life?
Well, I have to give thanks to my grandfather, Ole, who came to America from Norway and giving me lutefisk and lefse and all the other good things that we had on the farm. And also enjoying good friends.
Well, you sure had a lot of those, many of them here at WGN. And I know you counted Bob Collins as one of your closest.
Yes. Indeed.
Those plans that you two had didn't quite work out, did they?
Well, Bob and I were going to sit on the porch in Arizona and watch the desert go by, and we never got to do that.
No, but you retired from here a few years ago with a lot of memories, Big O.
Oh, yes. Memories that I'll never forget. It was a great time. Really was.
Yes, and Ori and a bunch of us have gathered together to wish you a happy 90th birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Ori. birthday to you.
Thank you very much. I look forward to many more.
That's the Business of Food on
720 WGN.
Speaking of money that you borrowed, you got to pay back. Greg, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Great to be with you, John. Happy Friday.
You all are reporting on the savings rates that people get. What's the story here?
Well, interest rates have gone up dramatically, and the rates that we see on things like savings accounts are now the best that we've seen, among the best that we've seen in more than 15 years. But only a small share of Americans are actually taking part in that. Just 22% of savers are earning at least 4% or more on their savings. Now, that's up significantly from last year, was just 7%. But yeah, still, we're talking about millions of savers that have their money in an account that's earning a very uncompetitive return when better returns are well within reach.
Where do you put the money to get 4% or more?
Well, you have a number of different options. I mean, I think the easiest for most people are high-yield savings accounts. I counted the other day on our website, we had 15 accounts that are available nationwide, earned 5% or more, and required no more than $100 to open the account. And 10 of them had no minimum to open the account. So literally within reach of everyone. And emergency savings is something we all need. You can look at money market funds, for example. You know, in your brokerage account, you've got a money fund. It's probably earning something in the neighborhood of 5%, but they often have minimum deposit requirements. You know, the low hurdle to clear are these high-yield savings accounts that you can then link to the checking account you have with your current bank or credit union. So we're not talking about having to move all of your accounts or anything like that. No, you're just going to take your savings, you're going to put it someplace where it's going to be welcomed with open arms and higher returns.
You're not talking about treasury bills or I-bonds. You're talking about a traditional savings account?
Yes, exactly. Talking about traditional savings account. Treasury bills, another option, with yields north of 5% on those very short-term instruments. But those are great for investment purposes. But for that rainy day fund, that money you're going to need at a moment's notice if the car needs repaired, high yield savings account is really the ideal place to be. It's easy to get into, easy to open up. You can link it to your traditional bank account, so you don't have to do anything differently in terms of managing your day to day finances. But the significance is earning that higher return. It gives you a shot at preserving your buying power over time. You work hard to squirrel away every dollar in that emergency savings. You want to make sure it still has the buying power when time comes and you need it.
I'm trying not to sound too surprised here. That is, I know that interest rates are up and higher yields are available, but I remember not that long ago, the passbook savings account or whatever you call it at my bank was 0.1%. That you can get that at a bank without going through these instruments, 4 or 5% is a little surprising to me. And so I guess if that's not my bank, I then deposit money into a bank. I go online and do this. Is that what I do?
Yeah. Yeah. And here's the reality, John, that savings account that was paying 0.1%, it's probably still paying 0.1%.
I'm sure it is.
In a world where you can get something north of 5%. And so, yes, you could go online, you can open up one of these accounts in 15 minutes, link it to the checking account you have at your current bank. You can transfer money back and forth as needed, but you're going to make a significant difference in the interest earnings that you get. And again, with a pretty minimal investment. Minimal investment doesn't take much in the way of savings to be able to take advantage of these, doesn't take much in the way of time to open up one of these accounts, and it's something that we all need, that rainy day fund.
It's interesting to me that this would be intra-bank, you know, that it wouldn't be my bank that is giving me 5%. It would be a different bank, and I would be able to transfer from bank X to bank Y, huh?
Yes, absolutely. It usually takes a day or two, so, you know, you kind of have to plan a little bit ahead, but, there's no penalty. The money is liquid, and, you know, this is a type of account that, because their earnings are so much higher, you want to make more deposits than you do withdrawals. You can set up direct deposit of your pay, from a portion of your paycheck to go into that savings account if you want. You can transfer money over from your checking account. to boost that savings. But when you need it, you can just as easily transfer that money back into the checking account to pay that unplanned bill that arrives.
Yeah. You guys have an interesting story about this, how it breaks down by millennials, how it breaks down by different percentages of people that are earning what different rates. It's fascinating. Greg McBride is the chief financial analyst at Bankrate. Click on there and see what he's talking about. Go to bankrate.com. Well done, Greg. Thanks for the insight.
Thank you so much, John.